Welcome to the TaxCast from the Tax Justice Network. 15 to 20 minutes of global news and analysis on tax havens and corruption you won't hear anywhere else. With me, Naomi Fowler. The TaxCast is available to everyone for download and broadcast on www.tackletaxhavens.com. Here's a quick roundup of the Tax Justice news this month. There are media reports everywhere incorrectly reporting the era of banking secrecy is coming to a close as G20 countries sign up to automatic information exchange by the end of 2015. Here at the Tax Justice Network, what we think we're seeing is the beginnings of fairly pointless window dressing. And that's a road we hope can only eventually lead to real reform. As I keep reporting here on the TaxCast, without proper transparency and a mandatory register of the real owners of companies and trusts, and proper legislation on transfer pricing, the doors are still very much wide open. And automatic information exchange agreements are all very well, but courts in secrecy jurisdictions can block them, as the Cayman Islands Grand Court demonstrated this month. It stopped a decision to provide data based on 4 requests made under a tax information exchange agreement between Caymans and Australia. The EU Commission's investigating Gibraltar's corporate tax regime to see if it breaches EU rules, at Spain's request. And there's lots happening in Switzerland. The Swiss Parliament's passed the tax agreement with the United States, FATCA, the Foreign Account Tax Compliance Act, but efforts are mounting to get the 50,000 signatures in 100 days needed to hold a referendum to try to throw it out. We'll be keeping an eye on that here on the TaxCast. Another interesting development, if you've got less than $1 million in your Credit Suisse bank account, they're going to be closing it down in 50 countries. Are they getting nervous about Know Your Customer regulations and fines, so they're ditching the little people that aren't worth the risk? You've heard of a LIBOR-fixing scandal. Now Swiss banks are suspected of rigging currency rates. Multiple banks around the world are potentially implicated, according to investigators. Watch out for that one. And finally, remember the Lagarde list of thousands of suspected tax evaders with bank accounts in Switzerland? Well, the journalist who leaked that data is being retried in Greece. So much for public interest journalism. And that's this month's roundup. Now we're going to talk to the Tax Justice Network's John Christensen for his take on this month. Okay, John, France and Colombia have recently published their latest tax haven blacklists, and they have both left off Switzerland. I'm curious, why is it missing from their list?
Well, we don't really know. One can speculate, for example, that they just forgot about Switzerland, but that doesn't seem very likely, does it? I think far more likely, behind the scenes, we have some kind of political pressure. And that political pressure might be because there are politicians in Colombia and in France which have used Switzerland in the past or are still using Switzerland. Or maybe Swiss banks are very heavily involved in lending to the governments of both of these countries. One way or the other, this is a really suspicious case, and there's no clear explanation because Switzerland is so obviously one of the world's largest, if not the world's largest, tax havens. We have to ask ourselves, what's going on here?
Right, and in terms of these blacklists, I'm just wondering who actually decides which tax havens are going to go on these lists? How do they work?
In most cases, it seems that they are using completely different methodologies. There doesn't seem to be any consistency behind the preparation of these blacklists. In some cases, there are some very, very strange omissions. But in the past, we've seen blacklists produced at the very highest level. For example, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development created its own blacklist, which was published in 2000 and omitted the vast majority of the really big tax havens around the world, which strangely were, of course, largely OECD countries, including Switzerland, Austria, Luxembourg, United Kingdom and United States. So there's a pattern. The pattern seems to suggest that the countries that are omitted from these blacklists tend to be the countries which are politically more able to bring pressure to bear on the countries preparing the blacklists. And the countries that tend to be included are generally the smaller and politically weaker countries.
Right, and there's been lots of events this month in Switzerland. There's too many to talk about in this short time, but very interesting is that a Swiss village called Hedingen has voted to donate about 10% of the extra kind of windfall tax that's been paid by a resident boss of Glencore Xstrata, huge mining company. They're going to donate that money to humanitarian projects in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, Colombia and Bolivia because they don't feel very comfortable about the business that Glencore Xstrata does. They call it their dubious business conduct abroad. It's an interesting story, isn't it?
Well, I think the Hedingen story in Switzerland is a fascinating story and it's a very courageous story. Here we have a little village of only 3,500 people sitting close to the canton of Zug. And of course, Zug is the canton where Glencore has established its headquarters. And the villagers have voted to donate, I think it's $120,000 to charities because they don't feel comfortable with taking so much money from Glencore when Glencore is one of the world's leading mining companies involved in shifting profits out of the countries where they make these profits and into Switzerland. And Hedingen isn't the only village involved. There are other villages in Switzerland which are following the Hedingen example. Now, this is something, of course, we welcome. It's easy to dismiss this as rather tokenistic, but I think that overall this has a huge political effect. What it's signalling is that the Swiss people just don't feel happy with the way in which their country is being used by very powerful companies like Glencore to shift profits out of the poorest countries in the world. And I think it's great that the Swiss people are leading in this way.
Right, and it does throw up some interesting possibilities, perhaps, about what Swiss citizens can actually do, because with this system that they have of direct democracy, how could that apply possibly to tax justice? 50,000 signatures puts an issue to a national ballot. I don't want to exaggerate the possibilities, because the last time the Swiss voted on ending Swiss banking secrecy, they said no by a factor of 3-1. But things are changing, and this kind of thing could possibly lead to something a bit broader on the tax justice agenda, don't you think?
Well, I don't want to sound too optimistic, but I think events like this Hedingen decision to donate money to charity signal that there is a change of public attitude in Switzerland, and this is something we must all welcome. I think we mustn't be too optimistic. I think it's very possible that, for example, if the recent Swiss announcement about wanting to sign up to the OECD Council of Europe convention, which would include automatic information exchange, even if it went to Parliament and was ratified by Parliament, there's a genuine risk that it would be overturned at referendum.
Right, and there are attempts right now to get 50,000 signatures to vote down FATCA, aren't there? That's the tax deal with the United States, even though it's been passed by the Swiss Parliament. So this direct democracy can be perhaps swung by business interests the opposite way too.
But I think bit by bit we're seeing Switzerland slowly moved in the direction of that tipping point when the Swiss population will say, you know what, this is no longer worth the effort.
Right, so watch this space. And on the subject of countries talking the talk on tax reform, Ireland is changing its company tax laws, and it got a lot of stick, didn't it, from the Apple controversy, enabling Apple to avoid billions in tax and getting their tax rate down to 2%. So they say they're going to ban Irish registered companies having no tax residence. Companies like LinkedIn are not Irish registered, but they are using Ireland, aren't they, to lower their global tax bill by tens of millions of dollars a year. So Ireland's making some moves, although they're not actually going to make a huge difference, are they?
Well, Ireland's beginning to feel the heat, and the heat is coming from some very powerful players. For example, the US Senate. Very senior senators, including John McCain and Carl Levin, stood up at a hearing and said that Ireland is a tax haven and it's causing great problems for US tax residents. So What's happened is that Irish Finance Minister Michael Noonan has said that Ireland now wants to be part of the solution to this global tax challenge, not part of the problem. I suspect that unless the pressure's kept up, the Irish will end up doing very little, if anything at all. They're very unlikely to start adopting transfer pricing rules, which will make it harder for multinational companies to use Ireland as a place to ship profits. But the common theme to this month's stories is that the pressure on tax havens to be seen to be doing something is mounting. But at the moment, we're just still hearing warm words without any clear indication of what kind of actions are going to follow.
Thanks, John. John Christensen of the Tax Justice Network. Now it's time for the TaxCast's special feature. This month, the TaxCast takes a look at the David and Goliath story of tax collection, even for the world's wealthiest and most powerful country, the United States, and their Internal Revenue Service, the IRS. Of course, compared with poorer nations, the agency is well-resourced, but it's lost 10% of its staff in the last 5 years, 40% of them are eligible to retire, and it's not clear how new personnel are going to be trained up to replace them. And that's before they even get started on tax collection. Here's tax attorney, offshore specialist and Tax Justice Network senior advisor Jack Bloom.
IRS is generally considered the global gold standard for tax collection and enforcement. And at the moment, the gold standard is really not doing very well. The IRS receives on the order of 400 million tax returns a year. And of those returns, it can only look at a very small number. If you consider the kind of problem that confronts a tax auditor who's trying to audit some major corporation, you begin to realize how difficult looking into the problems and the tax issues of that corporation are. There might be a team of 6 or 8 or 10 people who begin to look at different issues raised by the tax return, but every team that does the auditing is under time pressure to close out the case. If they don't close it out quickly, their managers are saying, hey, we've got to move on, you've got to get to next year. We need to get a current return audit completion. So there's a huge problem when it comes to finding the resources to do a proper audit job of any really large taxpayer. There's also a huge problem in terms of investigating offshore cases, because the time involved in making mutual legal assistance requests, in terms of getting the data you need to find out what's going on, a major undertaking. And then finally, there's a problem of collecting the money. At the moment, the rules for most jurisdictions are that they will not assist in collecting a tax judgment. And now, on top of all of that, the IRS, without any additional funding, has been given the task of implementing the new healthcare system.
Right. So they're a bit busy. Let's talk a bit about settlements, because what often ends up happening is when a question is flagged up and they start to investigate and possibly think about legal proceedings, there's settlements which are done secretly.
All tax settlements are considered to be a matter of secrecy and confidentiality. The only time a tax matter comes public is if it enters the courts, at which point people can see what the tax dispute was about. But if the case is settled short of going to court, no one ever gets to see what the settlement looks like. The pressure to settle cases is immense because, as you can imagine, the cost and the time involved in trying a tax case is phenomenal. But that is a huge amount of work, and to do that it will require multiple court orders and probably months. And people will say, well, how much is this worth? What are we getting out of it? Why are we investing this resource? So this is a very tough business. And what you hope to do is you hope to frighten people enough so that they realize this illegal activity is dangerous and they can wind up going to jail. And the thing that's been most effective at the moment has not been the enforcement activity, it's been the whistleblower activity. Because what people have begun to realize is that data, no matter where it is, Switzerland, Cayman, or whatever, isn't safe, and that it can be turned over in bulk to tax authorities.
So our best chance of tax justice is more often than not reliant on whistleblowers, because enforcement's too expensive. And you were involved in a case, Jack, that illustrates that perfectly, and it does make the case for reform.
A well-known international oil company that I had the privilege of looking at several years ago had, as I was shocked to find, over 60 different sets of books, one for each jurisdiction that it was doing business in, and then on top of that, a set of internal books to allocate profits for bonus purposes and for internal management purposes, and they were all different. That was kind of a wake-up call to how this system of each jurisdiction having its own tax rules and allowing the corporation to set up its own profit and loss in each jurisdiction meant that they could wind up paying tax almost nowhere. And that is manifestly unfair.
And there's another problem listeners in less wealthy nations might be familiar with, isn't there? The same thing's happening in the world's wealthiest nation too.
There's another large problem, and this is an ideological problem, but also a problem that is not really being publicly debated properly. And that is that companies now take the position that they ought to be subsidized, that by coming into a jurisdiction and doing business, they're doing you a favor. So first, a corporation wants to build a factory. So it goes to the government of whatever jurisdiction it is, a U.S. state, a foreign country, and we know that they'll be going there not because of tax reasons particularly, but because there's a market, and they're going to make money. So there have been several examples in the U.S. where the states have gotten into a competition for the construction of the factory. Mercedes-Benz, for example, got the government of Alabama to agree to build the factory, to give them a tax holiday on the real estate tax, and then give them an exemption for, I think it was 10 years or more, on state income tax, if only to create a few jobs in Alabama. Now, what that costs the state is a serious question. And whether the state should be in the business of subsidizing a profit private corporation is another very serious question. Now, some states have taken the situation I've described, which is give them the factory, give them the subsidy and no tax, a step further and actually voted the tax that the corporation would collect from employees. This is withholding tax the state collects supposedly for itself, and they then turn it over to the company. They say, all right, you collected it, but you don't have to turn it over to the state. You keep it, and that's part of your subsidy for opening the factory. This degree of subsidization is no longer capitalism. It's a kind of state enterprise without the state getting anything for it. And the question is, why should this occur?
So what do countries do then? Because there's the international agreement level, which is not really going anywhere very fast. So what do world leaders do in their own countries who really want to address this problem?
Well, transparency, in my view, opening up the kinds of settlements, some of the levels of tax payment, making public the tax returns of companies that are public companies, would create a political environment where there would be action. Because my view is that no body politic will long tolerate the kind of giveaways that are now done in dark. Let's get a little light on it and see how it plays. I don't think it'll play very well. In my view, public companies should be taxed on the basis of the income they report to their shareholders. This business of having separate books for the tax man and separate books for the shareholders is ludicrous. If you had one set of books, the temptation to lie for bigger income numbers to get your stock price up would be tempered by the news that if you were successful in mounting that lie, you'd pay more tax. And likewise, the urge to lie on your tax return to keep the number down would be tempered by the news that your shareholders would get very angry at the very low reported income. Now, I think that unitary taxation would take us away from hundreds of sets of books in a given corporation, put us more significantly in a position to say, well, this is the way tax ought to be allocated fairly. Now, if the companies are left to their own devices, what they do is they set up separate books for each tax authority. And needless to say, when they do that, they put the expenses wherever the tax is to be levied and the profits somewhere else. So the idea of unitary is to say, look, we're not going to let you create books arbitrarily, a set of books for, let's say, California that say, hey, we didn't make any money here, and another set for the UK says, no, we made all the money in California. What we're going to do is say, you guys have a set of books. And that single set of books is going to be the basis for all of us deciding what tax we're going to charge. Now, it doesn't much matter what the rate is in each jurisdiction. If we're working off a single set of books, it's pretty clear that each jurisdiction will have a legitimate chance of collecting income tax. Without that common set of books and without a kind of unified system that forces people to say, okay, here's where I made the money, collecting a tax is very, very difficult.
Many corporations will use every option they can to minimize their tax bills, and we're leaving doors wide open to let them do it through subsidiaries in tax havens, secrecy, transfer pricing, accounting so complex even the tax authority of the richest country in the world doesn't have the resources to investigate it. Companies will carry on doing that until our governments legislate to stop them nationally. They have the power to do it. Now we need to be sure they find the will to do it. You've been listening to The Taxcast from the Tax Justice Network. For more Taxcasts, you can now find us on iTunes or go to www.tackletaxhavens.com.